What will journalism have to do to survive the 21st century? And what role will media consumers play in the new information equation? We'll take yet another stab at these questions and more on this week's Radio Berkman. If you have a job in the media, you might be a little depressed about the state of the news business. Papers are shutting down left and right. Local news outlets are consolidating with regional and national outlets to save money. And until recently, employed journalists are taking up new hobbies, like trying to justify their existence. But let's see the glass half full perspective, shall we? The dismantling of an entire industry and valued civic institution gives us the opportunity to take a look at its component parts, understand what it does, and reassess what specifically we value about it in the first place. In putting journalism back together again, we may just be able to make it work better. Our guest today thinks he has some ideas of how journalism can serve its purpose better, and involves some work on both the part of those who create media and those who consume it, and he suggests those two roles should not be mutually exclusive. Dan Gilmore is director of the Knight Center for Digital Media Entrepreneurship at Arizona State University's Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication, and a prolific media creator and consumer in his own right. David Weinberger sat down with him on Skype to figure out how journalism could rise from the ashes.
It's clear that we need, to put it bluntly, better journalism at all levels. Whether it's professional or traditional, as I tend to call it now, journalism, or citizen journalism, or network journalism, or whatever name we want to give it. We need it to be as good as we can get it at all levels. So the amount of experimentation going on, the amount of conversation going on, the wild moves not just toward a dissolution of the business model, but kind of a rebuilding of the business model at all sorts of levels and in all sorts of ways, fills me with confidence. Good supply is certainly going to be an issue, but supply, no, we'll have plenty.
What constitutes good supply?
I'm not one of the people who is gleeful about the demise of traditional newspapers. I think that's actually quite dangerous. And having the work they do when they do their work well is extremely important. And the part of that work, and one of the things we're going to have to figure out how to replace in this new world, is the kind of journalism that falls under the dog that didn't bark category. And what I mean by that is the boring public meetings that journalists have gone to, you know, eat your spinach journalism of civic coverage of City Hall and agencies and public officials and powerful business people. The very fact that these folks are at some level being observed by journalists has been a good thing.
On the side of the consumer, so to speak, or as we might say, participant these days, you've been pointing at some responsibilities that readers have as well.
We have a pretty big issue on the demand side. And by that I mean is that we're not very demanding. We don't insist on better journalism than we get. The fact that the mass media world of the past half century, at some level they've said, okay, I'm going to outsource my knowledge, my knowledge base or my understanding of the world to you. And I'm going to, I don't really trust you that much, but I'll, you news people, but I figure I'll just take what you do and that'll be that. That's actually pretty lazy. Citizenship and participation in a democracy demands a little bit more than being a passive receptacle for what people tell you. And I think demands that you take some responsibility for knowing whether it's right. That's part of the participatory model, I think, of democracy and of this republic that we should be thinking about. One of the good outcomes, perhaps, of this dissolution of the mass media model that has turned people into passive consumers is that at some level we're going to be forced to take more responsibility for knowing what we know if we can persuade people that they need to do that. And that, as you point out, is going to be the rub.
Well, so you have a set of principles that you've been promulgating. Can you take us through those briefly, and then we'll come back to why or how people will take them up?
Sure. And promulgating makes me sound like I'm a bureaucrat telling people.
I was thinking more Old Testament.
I can be a cruel, cruel promulgator, I can tell you. Okay, so the principles for people who have been consumers fall into five major categories. One is to be skeptical of absolutely everything, whether it's the New York Times or a blog that you happen upon randomly or anything else. A second principle is, you know, don't be equally skeptical of absolutely everything. That's stupid. There are things that we have good reason and have learned to trust more than not over time. I think of this as having a sliding scale in my brain of a credibility meter. A third one is ask questions. And that's one of the ways you can be not equally skeptical, is to say, well, if you're going to go do something of significance in your own life, or that you're going to, you know, start believing in something of significance, like a candidate for office that you care about, an advertisement is insufficient to make that choice if you're an active user rather than a passive consumer. So ask questions. That helps you know what to trust and what not to trust. Ask your friends, ask your community, and we need better tools for this. A fourth one, and I have great debt to Ethan Zuckerman, who helped me think this through, is to go outside your comfort zone. Look for things that, if it's political, are guaranteed to make your blood boil, because you learn from people who disagree with you. Challenge your own assumptions. Read about people and cultures you never otherwise would. So actually, take responsibility again to go outside your normal comfort zone. And then finally, to learn media techniques. The how to create media part, whether it's blogs or videos or just writing or whatever, the part that not too many people are good enough at is the media technique, understanding the media technique of persuasion, much less manipulation. And I think we need to be pretty active in understanding those things as well.
Those seem like completely sensible principles. You're talking about them because there's a need to. People are not doing that. Why aren't people already doing that? And what has to happen in order to get people to adopt the principles, to go from principle to actual behavior?
There's a fair amount of inertia, the rise of mass media that produced a news culture where a grandfatherly looking guy said, and that's the news. And we thought, okay, that must be true, which was a suspension of disbelief in any event. People have lives, which is to say they don't have a lot of time. If we don't find ways to help people build these kinds of active uses of media into their daily lives, none of this is going to work.
What I want to ask you, because I'm very interested personally in how much of the inertia that you refer to comes from our previous broadcast-based environment where we could just sit back and be bathed in photons, and how much of it is due to what, for the moment, we'll call human nature. So why is it that you think that people tend to believe anonymous comments even when they are scurrilously attacking an individual?
I suspect right now, one of my hypotheses is that I'm like a lot of other people. There, at times, I get caught up in emotion and say, God, you know, when I hear about something and I see some evidence but not enough to prove it, and I assume something must be true. It will take a lot of time to turn around the mindset that it's worth paying any attention whatever to anonymous attacks. And this will start with parents and schools to basically get people to come at it eventually from the reverse, which is to say, well, you know, just to either pay no attention, whatever, or to say, well, that's just, you know, and that's, oh, it's an anonymous attack. It's got to be bullshit.
What else can be done in order to get these principles adopted so that they actually affect behavior?
There's an institution that could have been doing this all along that it may be too late for them in every respect, but I believe for some time that this should have been a core mission of journalists to be helping people understand this. The risk for the journalists of doing that, of course, is that it would invite the readers to observe more closely what the journalists have been doing. And in many cases, it would lead to the audience realization that actually what they've been getting is pretty crappy. There are a whole set of journalistic principles, one of which is transparency, and this is part of it. For people doing journalism at any level, I think they would be believed a little bit less, but they would trust them more. And those are different words with really different meanings in this context, though they tend to get lumped together.
So believed less, trusted more,
yeah,
and in some sense trusted better, a better grounded trust.
Right, and an informed trust. And again, this all comes back to these questions of understanding that practically everything about life is full of nuance. It's almost never fully black and white. And it comes back to this issue. We have to take a little more responsibility for our own knowledge and beliefs and not just hand it off to other people to tell us.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Dan Gilmore is the director of the Knight Center for Digital Media Entrepreneurship at Arizona State University's Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication. You can follow Dan Gilmore at his website, dangilmore.com. That's dangilmore.com. Check out the Radio Berkman blog, where you can find some additional links, including to a full-length talk Dan gave last week about this very topic, along with longer posts by Dan on the 5 principles for media consumers and creators. You can find our blog at blogs.law.harvard.edu/Media Berkman. This episode of Radio Berkman was produced by me, Daniel Dennis Jones, at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University.